You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Broadway Gives Back podcast. I'm your host, Jan Svensson. This podcast spotlights Broadway actors, shows, and organizations in their pursuit of social impact and philanthropy. Join us as some of the brightest lights on Broadway share their stories about their favorite charities and how they got involved, and the people on the causes who benefited from these philanthropic efforts. Anika Larson is currently playing Elaine Miller in Broadway's Almost Famous the Musical. She's also performed on Broadway in Beautiful, the Carol King musical, and received a Tony nomination and a Drama Desk Award, Avenue Q, Xanadu, All Shook Up, and Rent. Anika joined the Theater Climate Revolution via the Broadway Green Alliance and leverages her social media to share behind-the-scenes Broadway fun that also happens to demonstrate Broadway sustainability. She is a huge supporter and activist, not only for environmental issues, but also for arts education and children's theater. Anika, welcome to the Broadway Gives Back podcast.
That was a lovely intro. Thank you. Would you come everywhere with me and just say that when I enter rooms?
I would love to. Thank you. Well, I'm so happy you're here today.
I'm happy to be here today. It's kind of a sad day because we just found out that our show, Almost Famous, is closing on January 8th. But I guess if this business has taught me anything, it's resilience. Even this is a particular heartbreaker. I really, really love and believe in this one. Just a really tough time for theater, for new theater particularly.
It is. So we're gonna drop this podcast and hopefully everyone will hear it and get to see this show before January 8th.
Yeah.
But we definitely feel your sadness. And it is like the nature of the beast here, sadly.
Yeah, it sure is.
Well, you know what? We're going to talk about Almost Famous, but we're also going to talk a lot about just giving back and philanthropy and activism. But before we do that, I thought maybe we'd do a little sort of vocal warm-up and do some rapid-fire questions.
Oh, my goodness. I'm ready.
Are you ready? Okay. So I've themed these all for the holidays. So let's see how we do. If you were an elf in Santa's workshop, what would your assignment be?
Oh, knitting. Knitting stockings.
Gosh, you and Sutton, right?
Something that's true. I only knit stockings, though, so that's why I literally can't make anything else. So that's why I'd be perfect as an elf knitting stockings.
What would your elf personality be like? What three adjectives would you use to describe your elf?
Oh my goodness,
your elf self.
My elf self. OCD. This is not one word, but super good at deadlines, and joyful.
Joyful elf. What's your favorite holiday tradition?
Well, you know, I have two little boys now, so it's changed, right? Because it's all about them. Because it's joyful when you're a kid, and then it stops being so special when you're just a 20-something, and then you have kids, and you just the joy of it is all brought back to you. So I think it would be all the stuff that involves them. I mean, really, I suppose how excited they get. I mean, it's like they're on drugs, the euphoria of it all when we decorate our Christmas tree. But really anything involved with the holidays that has to do with my kids. It's so magical.
Nice. So what's the best or the worst holiday gift that you've ever given or received?
Can I do the best, the worst birthday gift I've ever received? Because that was yesterday was my birthday.
Oh, and happy belated.
I got a closing notice for my beloved Broadway show. So worst present ever, which is what I texted back to all the people sending me love.
Yeah. Gosh. Is there a character or scene in any holiday-themed Broadway show or even a movie or a book or a TV show that you love or relate to?
We're so obsessed with Elf in my house. because it's just, it's one of those movies like that 5 and 7 year old boys and then grownups can equally enjoy. That I relate to in that. I don't know. I guess it's back to being the OCD elf, as I would. it's the scene when Will Ferrell, he decorates the whole, all of the, it's not Macy's, but the fake Macy's, the inside of it. I love decorating for Christmas. And if I had those powers, that's exactly what I would do.
Love it. So if you were Santa, what kind of cookies would I be leaving out for you on Christmas Eve?
any cookies. I have such a sweet tooth, all cookies. I do not discriminate when it comes to cookies.
Since the holidays are about family, they're about giving, and I wondered, what's the last random act of kindness that you've performed?
I don't know how random it is, but I very much make a point to, and I do this, I think, all the time, certainly at the theater, is I think often we think lovely things about people and we don't say them, especially if they're people who are successful at what they do. You think they know it. And so I really always try to make a point to articulate, to say out loud those positive things, and big or small, sort of like with Yelp reviews, right? It's like everybody voices it when they had a terrible time at a restaurant, but if they had a great time, they just go home and move on with their lives. And I think, no, we should Yelp review each other throughout our lives and be letting each other know all of the ways that we appreciate each other.
I love that. Yelp review each other through all of our lives. That's great. That should be like, you should knit that on some kind of stocking. Yeah, that's a good quote. Sure. What are you most grateful for this holiday season?
Even though it's closing, I'm grateful to be back on Broadway. I'm grateful to be working again. It was really hard to be languishing for so many years. And, you know, I did everything I could to try and feel like a theater artist throughout COVID times. And a lot of good came out of it for me in terms of trying to pivot and, you know, finding new skills that I didn't know I had. I directed for the first time, and I want to keep doing more of that. I've also started hosting things like this that I didn't realize that I was good at that. And so, and of course, time with my children when they're so young. There's so much good that came out of it. But I keep saying I felt like a goldfish that was flopping around on a counter for 2.5 years, and then I went to rehearsals for Almost Famous, and it felt like somebody had put me back in my bowl. And so I'm grateful to be swimming back in my bowl. And even though I'm going to have to move to a different bowl sometime soon, I'm getting evicted from my Almost Famous bowl. I know that I'll be swimming again soon.
I believe you will. Let's just talk about your two boys, because they're called the Beautiful Boys, right?
They are. They only exist because of Carole King and Cynthia Weil, who I played, and Beautiful, the Carole King musical. Because my dresser on that show, I guess I complained too much about my love life backstage, because one day during a quick change, she said, "Would you like to be set up on a blind date with a trumpet player named Freddie?" I said, "Sure, gotta go." cut to 3 months after it was an amazing blind date. He's a trumpet player, and I watched him play for an hour and a half at B.B. King's, R.I.P. B.B. King's on 42nd Street, doesn't exist anymore, but I watched him play and it was amazing. And I thought, please let us have something to talk about. And we shut the bar down talking all night. And 3 months later, I moved out of my Brooklyn apartment into his house in the suburbs. And 3 months after that, I was pregnant with our first. So our two boys, they're 5 and 7 now, but they wouldn't exist if it weren't for that show. My family wouldn't exist if it weren't for that show.
That's beautiful. Aw. Now, speaking of suburbs, I'm going to take you farther north. You grew up in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And what's so fascinating is you had, is it 9 brothers and sisters from different races and countries?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So I have so many questions, but first talk about that, because what I really want to know is, how did this childhood that you had inform and influence who you are today?
Oh my goodness. Sort of in every important way. My parents are extraordinary. My mom in particular, she grew up in Connecticut, in sort of upper middle class white Connecticut, and she didn't speak to a Black person for the first time, like a real conversation, until she was in college and one of her professors was Black. And she was so upset by that, and when it came time to start making a family with my dad, they knew she had, it was even rarer then than it is now, interracial adoption, but she had seen it. And so she thought, if I'm going to be mom, I'm going to be super mom. She didn't think that, but that's my subtext for her, because I think if she'd been born 10 years later and really sort of she was on the cusp of the women's lib movement, if she'd been born 10 years later, she would have been, I think, a surgeon. But yeah, so she's just a highly competent, sort of incredible woman. She's my model for a fierce, unorthodox mother, like the one that I play on stage in Almost Famous. So yeah, so they started, I was the first by birth, but by the time I was born, they had adopted 4 kids. Wow. Yeah, 6 by adoption, 4 by birth. And it's made me who I am today in all of the important ways. It's made me, being one of 10 has made me a compulsive team player, which really serves me in such a collaborative art form. And then, being raised with such an awareness of, we didn't call it anti-racism back then, but the importance of diversity and people's humanity and has really formed who I am and how I move in the world.
So you really, your mom was really an activist, and she said, I'm going to put my life, change my life and show how I can be an activist in real time and in your own home.
Yeah. Well, they always say the personal is political, and It's being the change, right?
Right. It's exactly being the change. Yeah. Wow. So I want to pivot a little bit and talk about children's theater. So it's you, we're going to get to Broadway Green Alliance in a little bit, but I was just fascinated when I was, reading about you that you also are, have done so much work in the area of children's theater, and you actually founded a theater company to promote truth through performance, which I love, through performance and service to school kids, to at-risk youth, to teen alternative incarceration programs and more. What motivated you to do that?
My best friend in the whole wide world for decades is April Nichol. She was a director, a theater director at the time. And it really was her concoction, her idea. And the minute she pitched it, I was like, yes, I'm all in. We were young and naive and didn't know how much it would take to run a theater company and how hard it is to raise money for a theater company. Even one that's sole purpose is to serve. So it lasted 4 years, but it's the 4 years of my career I'm proudest of. We really did. Looking back, I remember the light bulbs that went off behind children's eyes, the joy we spread, and really a lot of the purpose of it was for theater people, for me particularly, I felt it's so hard to serve in a way that is regular and reliable because our lives are so erratic. I mean, the Exhibit A being Almost Famous is closing in January 8th, my life is flipped upside down, right? So everything I thought I knew was happening in 2023 is not now. But that's typical of our lives. Your agent calls and says, you're gonna be on tour in 2 weeks and you're touring the country suddenly. And that's the joy of it, sort of, for some people. I'm too much of a planner to enjoy that part of it, but it does keep it interesting. When I first moved to New York City, I became a big sister in the Big Brother, Big Sister program. I was a terrible failure at it. I just couldn't be there every Thursday afternoon. And I let her down so many times and had to cancel so many times. And then I got cast in Rent in LA and I sent her postcards for a while, and that fizzled. And I just thought, I can't ever let a kid down again like that. So one of our aims with this theater company was to create ways for theater people to serve that didn't require ongoing commitment. It was just lots, and we would schedule all of them, but it was lots and lots of one-offs, and we had lots and lots of backups. So if at last minute somebody got a call back, we got it. We understood. We were overstaffed. Mm-hmm. I know how many, not only like the people we affected, but also just everybody wants to help. The minute you say, hey, here's this way I can make it easy for you to help, people jump at it. So it was really heartening to see how many theater people came alongside us. And, it helped brighten their lives, too.
And I like the idea of this idea of promoting truth through performance and service, like this idea of truth, especially for these kids who are at risk, because I bet that's a different way to reach them. And I haven't heard that from a lot of organizations that do children's theater or help you know, with arts education. I love that.
Oh, thank you. It's actually, the full thing is to promote mercy, beauty, and truth through performance and service was our complete mission. But yeah, that was, we had lots of meetings, you know, when you're creating your mission statements and all of those things. We had lots and lots of heartfelt and idealistic meetings about what we wanted to be doing. But yes, I agree. I think it captures a lovely way of phrasing. Because, I mean, one of the programs that we did is a playwriting program for fifth graders in public schools. And so they would write their own plays. And so much of it was about them being able to articulate their own truths. Mm-hmm. Kids whose stories aren't necessarily being heard get to speak their truths and then get to act out their truths. And there's a real empowerment in that and a real support of one's own self-worth, I think, in that.
That's beautiful. It really is.
Thanks.
And you also released an album of lullabies, which I have to listen to because I am not a good sleeper. But what I love is in your promotion of it, you say that it's for people of all ages.
Yes, it is. It is. You know, it's funny. The wonderful Dan Watt, who produced it, came to me. I was doing Beautiful. And he came to me and he said, would you like to do an album? And I said, no. I don't write music. Why would it? And it comes back to one of my life's compulsions is that being one of 10 kids, I'm desperate for attention, but deeply uncomfortable when I get what feels like too much or more than my fair share of it. So the idea of a whole album that's just me, singing cover songs just so people can hear me sing felt so uncomfortable that I was like, no, thanks. And then I was visiting my nieces and nephews, and I was singing them the lullabies that I sing to them, which are never kids' lullabies. They're always like gorgeous Broadway standards or wonderful jazz songs or whatever. And I thought, oh, but wait, but an album that had a point, that had a purpose, that I could get behind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one that people could give people as like a baby shower gift or, you know, for grown-ups
for grown-ups who can't sleep.
Grown-ups who can't sleep. But I also think you don't, kids can handle the sophisticated musical palette, and I didn't want it to be childish. Mm-hmm. And I was, I guess at the, ultimately I didn't think about it this way till right this moment, but I guess I was making the album for my future kids and the music I would want them to be hearing. And so I wanted it to be, sophisticated musically. And the lovely thing was I had just met my now husband, and he's a trumpet player. And I said, would you play on it? He only plays on 3 songs. I would have had him play on more if I knew he was going to really stick around. but while we were recording it, I got pregnant. So, and the boys, it's in there. We have a CD player. It's a clock CD player in their bedroom. Wow. Who knows how long it's going to last and if we'll
That's
be able to replace
school.
It. So old school. But they listen to that CD every night before they go to bed. And how magical that they're now listening to the thing we created. I don't know, I suppose in hopes of having kids one day. And then the fun thing that I'd always wanted to do, and this I learned from my many years of babysitting, was sometimes if I was not feeling great or hungover or just tired, I would just sing the same song over and over again to the kid I was babysitting. And I would just do it slower and slower to help them go to sleep. So if you listen to the album in order, the songs get slower and slower as they go on.
Oh, nice trick.
Yeah,
I wish I had that when I was raising my kids too. Okay. Everybody's learned something new today. Well, speaking of creating things, so let's talk about Almost Famous. Mm-hmm. I don't want to make you cry.
No, I can't. At the end of the day, what a joyful experience.
Yeah, such a great story. And what a character you played. I mean,
oh my God. I mean, I don't know that I'll ever get a better one, honestly. It's a phenomenal character.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's really hard to say goodbye to.
Now, I'm sure people ask you this question, but, you know, Frances McDormand played this role in the film. And I just wondered, did that influence any of your choices in playing Elaine on stage?
That was the reason I said yes. I hadn't seen the movie, but my agent called. He said something he'd never said before or since. He said, I want you to be as excited about this project as I am. And I said, what? He said, it's Almost Famous. And I said, I have an image of a bus and Kate Hudson in glasses, but I haven't seen it. And he said, well, it's the Frances McDormand role. And I said, oh, well, then I'll do it because I don't know what the role is, but she always plays people who are compelling, interesting, and have an inherent integrity that I knew I knew it would be a role I would be proud to play, even though I didn't know what it was yet. So I watched the movie that weekend, and then 2 days later was in the first day of rehearsals for the first workshop of it. And it was awful because she's my favorite actor of all time. So why would I ever do anything different than her? Why would I say any lines different? Why would I make any different choices? And so I felt so trapped in her performance that I just felt off my game. And I thought, oh, they're going to replace me. There's no way. They're keeping me. I was terrible this week. Happily for me, they kept me. And of course, I never have gone back to watch the movie again, so that time helps to forget her performance. And then also just the repetition and the practicing and the morphing of my own performance. And then at the end of the day, what she does so masterfully is she can say volumes with a look. I don't know how I don't understand TV and film acting. I don't know how she does it so well. Mm. But my job is to sing those volumes in songs. So the scope of work is so different that I at some point just really stopped worrying about comparison and decided I'm going to do the Elaine Miller that's in the script of the musical. And she did the Elaine Miller that's in the screenplay for the movie. And those are different. Yeah. And also just the amount of trust that Cameron Crowe put in me and the amount of just incredibly positive, supportive, lovely feedback. I just feel so secure that I'm doing it well in his eyes. And that's really, if he approves of my performance, then I know I'm doing it right. So
yeah. Well, anyway, it's such a beloved, you know, film, and it's yeah. hard to translate sometimes, you know, film to stage. And also, you know, you guys have done an amazing job with that, but it's just, there are hard times on Broadway right now.
Yeah, so. I don't think it's the show. I think the show is fantastic. And I just, the audience is how excited they are when they leave, how happy they are when they leave. I know that the vast majority of them are telling their friends that it was wonderful. I just really do think that people aren't coming back to Broadway yet like they did before COVID. And not just tourists, local people. The Schuberts just did a study.
I read that.
Yeah, that 35% of people within 90 miles of the city were 35% down in those people's. And it makes sense because offices in Manhattan are at 50% capacity. So the people who were at their office all day and then saw a Broadway show in the evening are at home finishing a Zoom at 6 o'clock and not driving into the city to see a show. And all of that makes sense, but it's killing us. The shows that are trying to get a foothold. It's not going to be just us. I mean, I'm not a producer. That's why I don't know the solution, but the timing for us is really, really unfortunate because I really think there's no reason in normal times. There's no way this wouldn't run 5 years.
Yeah,
at least.
For sure.
So it's just heartbreaking.
It is. It is. And I do think that when I think back about the time that I've worked on Broadway as, you know, a marketing person and an executive, you know, we went through 9/11. We went through the recession of 2008. And I feel like, you know, we're going to make it through. This is just such a different type of, you know, experience. Yeah. And I think it's just going to take time to bounce back.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah.
And you never know what's going to happen. You know,
never do.
So I feel optimistic for the show, and maybe something will happen with it. You never know.
Yeah.
But it's also really hard to have a show in the middle of winter on Broadway, even in the best of times.
Yeah. No, absolutely. January and February. Hey, everybody listening, go see a Broadway show in January and February.
Absolutely.
Because it's the hardest time for Broadway. It's just, it's always, no matter what, it's always the hardest time. If you can do that, you're supporting an art form.
Yeah. And I mean, it's so cold right now too. And I mean, let's get into climate change because that's a good segue.
Right.
Now, as we record this, I'm actually in LA for the week and it's just like, it's so cold here. And I know that sounds really crazy to say to people who are on the East Coast right now, but for LA, it's freezing. You know, climate change is real. And you are such an advocate for the Broadway Green Alliance. And you sort of joined their cultural or their revolution about what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And you use your Instagram and you post these behind the scenes fun ways to sort of help Broadway's and communicate Broadway's sustainability, but also give people tips on how to, you know, help support the environment. Can you talk a little bit about that? How did you get involved?
Absolutely. First, real quick, I just want to speak to like it being cold in LA, but it's also cold here. I just remember years ago seeing an interview with a climate scientist who said we shouldn't call it global warming, which is why we now call it climate change. We should call it global weirding because it's just going to get weird. Yes, the whole planet is going to get warmer, but it might not be so noticeable to depending on where you are. But it's going to get weird. And of course, it has with fires and hurricanes and droughts and beyond weird, horrifying. You know, about 6 months ago, I read yet another terrifying article in The New York Times about how dire the situation is. And I did what I think all of us do, which is I panicked. And then I thought, but I recycle, I drive a Prius, I take short showers, I vote for people who care about this and try to pass legislation about this. I don't know what else I can do. And then I went about my day and moved on. And that just didn't sit right with me for a few days. And I just thought, I think the difference is having children, right? And I just thought, I have to be able to look my little boys in the eye and say, I really tried to save your planet. And not everybody has the capacity for that. There are a lot of people who are just trying to get through their days. So I think those of us who can must. I didn't know what that looked like. But lucky for me, I have a friend who is a professor of sustainability up at SUNY New Paltz, the lovely Andrea Varga, and who is also a costume designer. She also teaches costume design, but in getting into the textile industry and ethical fashion and stuff, really pivoted and has really started focusing more on sustainability. But so she understands my world, and she's just unbelievably knowledgeable about all this stuff. And so I called her up and I said, what do I do? And she said, well, we all have to act locally. We all have to do what we can, where we can. And for everybody, that looks different because it has to be something that you can actually manage to fit in your life. Mm-hmm. But for most of us, there are more things that we can be managing to fit in our lives without it being onerous. And she said, but the good news for you is your local is Broadway and Broadway gets attention. And I was like, ding, 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 ding. That is true. And I'm about to star in a show on Broadway. And I'm going to use the attention I'm getting from that show to just raise awareness about climate change. But in trying to figure out what does that look like, because everybody knows it's a problem. I don't need to be telling people it's a problem. I don't have any interest in preaching to people or telling people what to do, quite frankly. Sort of trying to figure out how that was going to play out. And then my first stop was, of course, the Broadway Green Alliance. And Molly Braverman there is just doing unbelievable work on a shoestring budget. And just the grassroots efforts she is leading that all of Broadway is responding to, and the amount of stuff that everybody is doing across Broadway in our Broadway houses, it's really, really heartening. So I thought, all right, what if I have so avoided social media. I have been so blissfully out of that, the melee that is. But then I thought, all right, but again, I'm doing it for my kids. So I joined Instagram purely. I don't post anything personal or a career even. It's all just posts. It's just, a blend of backstage shenanigans that involve some kind of Broadway greenness and just basically showing what people are doing. Which I think optimism breeds action. Positivity breeds action way better than helplessness does. I know, because I've felt helpless about this for decades. And then finally, I just started taking those first steps. In my very first post on Instagram, I talked about the movie Frozen 2. And Bobby and Kristen Lopez wrote just a fantastic song for one of the characters. She's at the lowest point of her life and doesn't know what to do to solve her massive problem. So she sings a song, Do the Next Right Thing. And that's all any of us can do. Corporations and governments can do more, but even they have to do the next right thing for them. It's just larger. But if all of us did the next right thing, I know now we can solve this problem. The more I have learned, the more I have researched, the unbelievable things people are doing out there, the unbelievable innovations that are happening, that are coming. People are solving this problem in ways large and small. It's a groundswell. It really is. Revolution is not too strong a word. It is a revolution, and people have different tactics, and we might not agree with all the tactics that people have, but everybody has to do it in their way. And so in my way, there's stuff that I'm partnering with the BGA in trying to get done, actual pragmatic stuff we're trying to do. I became a Broadway green captain. Every Broadway show has green captains that help their particular backstage be as sustainable as possible. That program has spread across the, so it's in national tours and regional theaters and colleges. I don't know if high schools do it, but they could, they should. So if you're a drama student out there, anywhere, you can become a green captain and you can help make your, so, I mean, I really think artists lead the way, right? And so we model it, right? And so that's really what the Instagram is it's just me being silly backstage, but also showing, hey, this is what we're doing. And then ergo, you could do it too. So for now, that is where I'm at. And but I have joined the revolution. And so I don't know where it's going to take me next, particularly now that I'm going to have more time in January. One thing that is coming up that's exciting that I'm working with Molly at the BGA and Jen Gambetis, my old friend from All Shook Up. I was her understudy in All Shook Up. We three are producing, along with Seth Rudetsky and James Wesley, a Broadway Green Alliance Stars in the House co-production, a concert at Green Room 42 with fabulous stars and lots of fun, really heartening. It's going to be optimism inducing. I always say I wanted to help people go from helpless to hopeless, helpless and hopeless to helpful and hopeful, which is really what's happened for me over the past 6 months, is in taking these first steps and starting to do the next right thing for me. It has really, really made me feel so much more helpful and hopeful than I did before. So it's going to be a really fun night. Seth Rudetsky makes everything silly and fun. You can go to Green Room 42 and be there in person, or you can stream it. So everybody can watch it live streamed, $25. So please, if you're listening, the Broadway Green Alliance needs help financially. So, that's the next thing on my docket, is to help make that wonderful.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Oh my God. First of all your passion, you're so amazing. And
oh,
like
thank
there
you.
Were like
but
20 different
reason for it.
Absolutely.
There's real reason for optimism.
There is. I mean, there were like at least 20 different things you said that I would have loved to take those quotes and put them on a little needle pointed pillow. It's great. I have so many questions right now. First of all, to everybody listening, in our episode page, we'll put links to everything that you just talked about.
Thank you.
So people can go to Broadway Green Alliance. They can learn more about it. We can give information about Seth Rudetsky's concert. Also, we have, there's an auction going on right now to raise money for Broadway Green Alliance. So I'll put that link in there too. It's an online auction where you get to come to New York and do like a whole, you know, week of theater.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Do you get to meet Carrie Butler? I feel like you get to meet Carrie Butler.
I think you get to meet Carrie Butler.
Yeah.
Yes. It's actually a sweepstakes.
Yeah.
For $10, you're automatically entered to win this gigantic thing. So we'll talk about that too.
Yeah.
But I want to go back to like your backstage shenanigans, as you called them.
Yeah.
Just can you give me some examples of ways that like what are some examples of,
sure.
of some of the shenanigans and some of the ways that Broadway, particularly your show, have been demonstrating sustainability?
Sure. All of this stuff is not just happening at Almost Famous. It's happening everywhere. But the first one was I came outside, the very first one, because I think this is a huge deal and wonderful and a real coup for the Broadway Green Alliance, is this happened years ago, but I got our house electrician, who I let everybody know is the handsome Matt Maloney, because there are two Matt Maloneys who work crew on Broadway shows. And this one, our Matt Maloney says he's the handsome one. So the whole interview, I call him the handsome Matt Maloney. But we stand outside the marquee and he tells everybody how they are now all across Broadway, LED bulbs instead of regular bulbs. And that means that Broadway marquees are using about 2/10 of the energy they used to use 15 years ago, which that adds up at the end of a year, right? That's a significant amount of emissions that are not put into our environment thanks to those bulbs. And that's, I think, a terrific example of meeting people where they are, is there are going to be Broadway marquees. To ask Broadway marquees to go dim for the sake of the planet, it's just, it's not going to happen. So how do you do it better? Mm-hmm. And this is the way to do it better, right? It's just... So there's that one. What are the ones that I've posted so far? Because we have some coming, but we talk about using reusable water bottles backstage. So we're not using it. We're trying to avoid single-use plastics. Who else have I interviewed? I'm going to post one tomorrow, so it will be out by the time this is out. But talking with my favorite usher, Joanne, about how they try to save paper using playbills. Again, there's going to be playbills. There's going to be, people have tried to figure out ways to do digital ones. Everybody pays a lot of money to come to a Broadway show and they want their playbill. A lot of people collect those playbills. It's a special part of the experience. So it's just, you know, sometimes when I go, if I'm going with other people, we share one. If you keep it in pristine condition, they will reuse it. They take the stuffers, if there's understudies, they take those stuffers out at the end of the night and they reuse them. I'm trying to think of what else. What were the other things I did backstage? We reuse and repurpose the vases we get from opening night. And so my post about that, I haven't posted it yet, but my post about that one, I'll give you guys a spoiler, is that I make one of my castmates, Yana, who's wonderful, I make her read the card that came with my opening night flowers that I got from Frances McDormand. That's how I do a very heavy-handed segue into how we reuse the vases that were, because there's so many vases in the building after opening night, wonderfully, but you know, all of the things you think about. But yeah, it's I did one about how, because we use masks backstage, it's been an amazing way to contain COVID and other illness, quite frankly, backstage. It's come into our building and it's never spread. And I firmly believe it's because we wear masks backstage. And so we go through a lot of masks and those end up in landfills. So TerraCycle is a company that recycles them. And so we have a TerraCycle bin in our theater and people put their masks there and we recycle masks. But yeah, it's Broadway is, one of the fun things about our show is that because it's set in 1973, so many of our clothes are vintage. And in terms of fashion, the most sustainable thing you can do is buy something that's meant to last and rewear it. So talk about an example of that. I actually give a kind of a magnificent example of that because I wear in the show a shirt that was my mother's, that she was, ready for me to blow your mind. The show set in 1973. I was born in 1973. The shirt is a maternity shirt she wore when she was pregnant with me, when the play was happening, that I then wore when I was pregnant with each of my boys, that is now a shirt that I wear in the show. Boom.
Wow.
Talk about reusing, repurposing. So it's that kind of stuff. I could go on, but it's lots and lots of stuff like that. And now that I only have 3 weeks left, I'm going to double down and I'm going to get as many. I'm going to start doing these things daily if I can, just to capture as much of it as I can before we leave. But then I'm going to keep Green Mom AF on Instagram is going to live on. I'm just going to be doing it at other Broadway shows and with Broadway people outside of the Jacobs Theater because it's fun. I think it will be, I need more followers. I don't really get any of it. I don't know how to do it, but I'm going to get them as I continue to do what I do. I believe that.
I do too. So, you know, it's one thing. So Broadway is doing a lot to be greener, which is great. Mm-hmm. And I love your point about it's the small things, you know, that are important too. Mm-hmm. So can you give us some advice about what to do? You know, when Broadway Green Alliance first became an organization, I was actually part of the team that helped put on the very first press conference. Mm. And we worked with some other organizations. And I remember at that time, this is a long time ago, they gave us like a list, here are 10 things you can do, small things that will actually mean a lot if a lot of people do them.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that list has changed. I remember it was like unplug things when you're not going to be home or using a blow dryer.
Yeah, I don't think that list has really changed. I think it probably is. But yes, turn things off at the plug is a great way of thinking about that. Yeah. I mean, those lists are easy to find on the internet. So, and I feel like if I started to list, I would not do a great job of it. But I would like to urge people to do that. I think they maybe don't know about as much. That's a really great place to start if you're trying to figure out how you're going to help. And my friend Andrea Varga, professor of sustainability, turned me on to it when I called her that day. The UN Global Goals for Sustainability. It's a mouthful. They also like to call it the world's to-do list. All 193 of the UN nations have signed off on it. And in its agreement of things that need to happen by 2030 to help save the planet. But the beauty of it, there are 17 of them. The beauty of it is that inherent in them is an understanding that you can't make a greener world without making a fairer world and vice versa, and that all of our problems are so entrenched in each other that you can't fix one without fixing all of them. And so find the one that matters to you the most and start working on that. And on their beautifully branded and well laid out website, they have all of it broken down for you in such a user friendly way. And each global goal has targets and what you can do. But the first one is no poverty. The next one is no hunger. It's about access to education. It's about gender equality. It's about clean water. It's about social justice. It's this idea that we can't fix the world unless we do all of these things. So I would urge people to go to that website for the global goals and check that out. And really, it's the place to find which is the thing, because one of them is marine life and one of them is life on land and one of them is responsible responsible consumption and waste. I don't know what the word is, but getting rid of waste, like all of the different aspects of it. And so it's just a really good jumping off place for people who want to start being more active. Or just know what to do. It's so easy to feel helpless, as I've said. And the global goals help me feel hopeful. And I am hoping to, in the works, not hoping to, it will happen. I will make it happen. But I'm going to do a vlog about the global goals with different Broadway people. I was going to do it with my folks backstage at Almost Famous. And now I'm going to find a new way to do it. So it's still sort of in the work. It's being reworked. But a vlog with 17 episodes, and each episode will be about a different global goal. And hopefully it will still have the same vibe of fun and frivolity, but also always encompassing some sustainability and some ways to do the next right thing.
I love Do the Next Right Thing. We should collaborate on your vlog. That sounds so interesting.
Let's have a meeting about it. Yeah, okay. I'm going to take you up on it.
Okay.
I can use
help. I'd love to. Yeah, no, that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I love everything that we've talked about today. And I know a lot of people listening to this podcast, you know, one of the questions that I get most from people is, okay, I want to do something. And I mean, this is broader than the green conversation, just in the area of just being a philanthropist or being an activist.
Right.
And people get so stuck, like it's overwhelming. The world is so, there's so many issues.
Yeah.
And people just, you know, they need advice on how do I start? Yeah. What do I do? And I just wondered if you could give any advice based on your hopeful point of view and your experience.
I mean, we really do need people doing what they can everywhere, right? It's not just next door to the factories that we need the air to be. Like, everybody everywhere needs to be doing what they can. So it really is that like local matters. But there are groups everywhere. There are organizations everywhere that are just really, really hyper local. I mean, obviously, one of the first things that comes to mind is vote. Is the way that you vote really matters in terms of the legislation being passed is so huge. A really heartening thing is this federal legislation that Biden passed is very, very hopeful. And then even more importantly, the legislation that California just recently passed, everybody probably heard about it because it was one of the things is that they're going to phase out. You're not going to be able to make gas powered cars starting by 2035. And that's huge because I didn't know this till I read that article. But California is the fifth largest economy in the world. So as California goes, so goes the auto industry. They don't have a choice. So they're going to have to follow that. Everybody is going to ultimately have to follow that whether they want to or not.
Well, I love the advice of going local, you know, like
it really matters. It's the only way. And then it might lead to something broader, but it really is. It's the way every revolution works, right? Is person by person. Here's another thing that I think actually is important. And I was thinking about this a lot because I debated putting this in my Christmas card, talking about this. I always do an update of the family. And then I decided, no, I think we all need to be talking about this more. It needs to be a part of our everyday. It is such a big, dire problem that we can't make really any decision without thinking about. When I went Christmas shopping for my kids, for the first time, I started thinking about the amount of plastic packaging or what the gifts were made of. And I worked really hard to try and buy stuff that was made out of wood or, you know, and, sometimes that stuff is more expensive, so it's not possible for people. But in terms of doing what you can, it really is in every decision that you make. Do you run the water while you're shaving? Maybe you could not run the water while you're shaving. If everybody thought about that. Here's a really small thing that's really huge is when you wash your laundry on cold, short cycle. I have a 5 and a 7-year-old. They get so dirty and muddy. And I'm telling you, their clothes get washed on cold in a 27-minute cycle. That is huge. We don't, machines today and soap today are good enough that you don't need to wash on hot or even warm. You just don't.
Or even rinsing dishes before you put them in the dishwasher.
Exactly.
The dishwashers now are so much better. You don't really need to sit there and wash your dishes and rinse them. I almost wash them before I put them in the dishwasher before. And now I just kind of throw them in and they get clean.
Exactly. So I was debating whether or not to talk about climate stuff in my Christmas card because it's a downer. But I think with everything, if you talk about it in positive terms, in optimistic terms, but I really think we need to, and everybody can do this, create a cultural expectation that this is something we expect sustainability from everybody we encounter, certainly from our governments, our town governments, and our federal government. But we expect it from the business people in our communities, that it becomes an expectation that we are all doing our best in these efforts. The more we talk about it, the more we let people know what we're doing, I really think in other countries, it is different than it is here. I've talked about the global goals. They have their brand is this ring that looks like rainbows. I actually wore the global goals on my, a pin on my dress on opening night of our show. So if you see any photos of me on the runway, I'm wearing the Global Goals pin on my dress. And I'm wearing a dress that I have worn many, many times before in my life, intentionally to rewear that dress. And I'm going to wear it for the rest of this year. If I have anything else fancy to go to, I'm going to wear it to the concert that we do on January 23rd, 1/23/23, to raise money for the BGA. But it's just about, I really think the importance of talking about it. You don't have to say, hey, what are you doing? You should be doing. It's just, let's start talking about what we are doing so that we just, in that way, it starts creating this expectation as a country, as a society, as a planet, that we all are expected to do what we can every day. I think that that's huge. Oh, I was going to say, in Japan, business people are now expected to wear the Global Goals pin. And there's, you know, of course, backlash because some of them are not helping the planet, but wearing the pin. But I still argue, even if they're not helping wearing the pin, they are creating in Japan a cultural expectation that business people should be thinking about this. And then I do think the action necessarily follows if we are expecting people and we're upholding people to these standards.
This sounds like a good New Year's resolution, this cultural expectation. Of doing
our
best. Yeah,
except the problem with New Year's resolutions is that by February, you've forgotten them.
I don't know. I've kept a few, actually.
Have you? Good
yes.
for you.
Yes.
You're the only one.
I had a New Year's resolution last year that, you know how you get all the junk email? Well, if you unsubscribe, you know, they'll stop sending it to you. So I made a New Year's resolution that every piece of junk mail I got, I was going to unsubscribe immediately. Like, hit, because it takes a minute or two to like go through the steps to unsubscribe.
Yeah.
I have done it consistently.
I do
for
that too.
Year.
Yeah, oh, that's amazing. And you know what I've actually started doing too is I so resent getting paper junk mail at this point. I'm like, how have we not moved beyond this? Nobody reads their paper junk mail. Who's still even trying this? And so I just ignore it and recycle it. But now I've actually started It's not easy, but it's, I collect them. And then actually while I'm at the theater during my show between entrances, I am fighting the good fight for the planet. And I'm on my computer, hoping not to miss an entrance because I'm trying to help. but I now go to the website of the place and I find their contact email and I say, please remove me from your paper mailing list. It's a small thing, but I just don't want it. I don't want it. And it makes me disheartened and it makes me feel better when I get their email back saying we have removed you from our paper mailing list.
You are walking the walk and talking the talk and doing it all. And you're such an inspiration.
Oh, thank you. But there are, I just want to make sure like it's, you know, the whole virtue signaling and like, the, I don't know, sanctifying people for, there are also ways that I'm failing. There are also ways that I'm not, you know, like, and so I just, I'm just trying to do what I can. I just, in a way that is, I think, realistic for me in my life, and that's all anyone can do. But I just know how good it feels to be doing what I can. And I encourage other people to seek that great feeling.
Well, it has been a great feeling having you on this podcast, and it's a perfect way to end. I think, you know, I know that you got bad news, but I feel like the hopefulness in you and your voice, it's just, it's there. I was thinking about the holidays this year, the past few years actually, and, you know, peace, love, hope, and all that. And I think I want to change mine to more just, I hope 2023 is hopeful, you know, because I feel like there is so much to be hopeful for.
Yeah.
And we're not there yet. And we all do have our, you know, are things that we'd like to improve, but I feel like hopeful. So I feel like you've made me feel very hopeful today.
Oh, well, but I think that's, hope is contagious. Negativity is contagious, but I also do think we humans, most of us are naturally wired to want to be hopeful. And so when we feel it and when we are given good reason for it, it really, it does spread those endorphins or whatever they are that's firing off in your brain when you see, you know, even altruism. I mean, they've done studies. Altruism makes you feel good.
It does.
Doing this makes me feel good. That's part of the reason I'm doing it. Not just because I feel like I gotta, but it makes me feel good. So, it's the best drug there is.
Well, thank you so much. I wish you the happiest of holidays. And
you too.
I hope you have a good last few weeks of the show. And I'll be thinking about you. And
thank you.
We're excited to see what comes next. And all the, you know, career-wise, but also, you know, with regard to your activism. So thank you so much for being part of Broadway Gives Back.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Broadway Gives Back podcast. Broadway Gives Back is part of the Broadway Podcast Network. Special thanks to my producing partner, writer, editor, and friend, Jim Lochner. And thank you to everyone at BPN, including Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, and Kimberly Garris. I'd also like to thank Julian Hills from the Bulldog Agency and Eric Becker from Broderick Street Music. If you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you stream your podcasts. You can also follow Broadway Gives Back on Facebook and Instagram at Broadway Gives Back Podcast and on Twitter at Broadway Gives. To learn more, visit bpn.fm/Broadway Gives Back. Thanks so much.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.